Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Leave me alone, barked 15-year-old Kenny. I don't want to talk about it. All right, son, his dad responded. All I asked was how your first practice went. Wasn't the Spanish Inquisition, you know. Well, dear, Kenny's mom replied, passing the green beans down the table, sometimes the coach is a little hard on people at the beginning of the season. Kenny, how can you play basketball? His 12-year-old brother Mark piped up. I'm even taller than you. Okay, will you guys just shut up? I didn't make the team, okay? The coach said I'm just too short. Surprise, surprise. Well, suggested Mark, since their mascot's an alligator, you're not too short for that. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about growth deficiency in childhood? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has done a great deal of work in this field. Dr. Paul Kaplowitz is a pediatric endocrinologist and chairman of the Department of Endocrinology at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. His first book for parents was Early Puberty in Girls, about which he has written and been interviewed extensively. His second book is The Short Child with co-author Dr. Jeffrey Barron. He is married and has two grown sons and a 4-year-old grandson. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dr. Kaplowitz.
It's very nice to be here.
How can we know if a child is just short or if there's something actually wrong with his growth pattern?
Well, every child should be seeing their pediatrician on a regular basis. Obviously, in the early years, it's much more often, but after age 4 or 5, most children have at least one visit a year when they are seen for well child care. And pediatricians should be keeping growth charts on all children. And if your child is at the short end of the curve but is making steady progress, is basically what we say, following their own curve, then we tend not to be too worried, particularly if the child is very healthy. On the other hand, if the child is well below the curve, or if the child is still on the curve but seems to be falling behind over time, then we're much more concerned.
So if there's a change?
Yes. Either the child is very short to begin with, which in most cases would generate a referral from the child's physician, or if the child is falling behind, followed over several years.
Is this something, by the way, that can run in families?
Well, short stature definitely has a strong genetic component. Short parents tend to have shorter children, although for any given parent, there is a wide range of heights among their male and their female children. So it definitely can run in families.
But I guess parents shouldn't start getting concerned if they have a small baby.
Well, growth before birth is determined by very different factors that then determine growth after age 2. Usually by the time a child is 2 years of age, it's more apparent whether a child is going to be average, above average, or below average, or abnormally short. But most children who are born what we would say small for gestational age do catch up by the time they're 2.
What are the ways that experts and parents can predict a child's approximate adult height?
Well, all prediction methods are inaccurate, but some are more inaccurate than others. Doubling the height at age 2 is a very crude measure. It gets fairly close in some children, but it's way off in other children. I recently talked to parents of a short child where the father brought in his own growth chart, and his prediction at age 2 would have been 5'6", and he ended up 6'1". So you could be off by that much, and you can be off in either direction. Another way to make a prediction is to look at where the child is on the growth chart. Let's say that they're at the 5th percentile on a growth chart, and just presume that they'll end up in the 5th percentile and as an adult, which would be about 5'5" or 6". The problem with that is that it doesn't take into account the fact that children mature at different times. We have early and late maturing children, and that the strength of the growth spurt at puberty is different in different children. So that method is not very accurate. The one that we use in endocrinology for children that we're concerned about is to get an X-ray of the child's hand and wrist. And we can use that to determine what we call a bone age, which is their degree of skeletal maturation. And For instance, you may have a 10-year-old child who's the size of an 8-year-old child, but their bone maturation is that of an 8-year-old child, and that child should end up normal. So from the height and the child's bone age, you can usually make a reasonably good prediction that in most cases will be within 2 inches of the actual height. Of course, a lot of parents want you to tell them exactly. They don't want that. If you say, well, we think your child is going to be between 5'4 and 5'8, probably close to 5'6, they'll say, well, the 5'6 and above is fine, but I don't want the 5'4 or 5'5. So the truth is that there is no method which is completely accurate. But the closer you get to the end, the more accurate your predictions will be. So we can make a more accurate prediction in a 13-year-old than we can in an 8-year-old.
By the way, when you talk about an X-ray and the bone age and so forth, it doesn't have to do with the size of the bones,
no,
right?
No, it has to do with their shape. Obviously, the size gets bigger, but the actual shape of the bones in the hand and wrist change each year. And you can, what we do is we try to find the picture. We have an atlas. Each year has a different picture. And we try to find the picture that most closely matches the picture of the child.
There are a lot of different factors, obviously, that go into watching a child grow. What are some key points parents should understand about the growth of their children?
Well, the first part of the book, The Short Child, we spend several chapters discussing the factors which determine normal growth, and that includes, obviously, genetic factors. It includes nutritional factors. Very thin, underweight kids tend to grow a little bit slower than normal kids, and overweight kids tend to grow a little bit faster. But at the end, those things don't determine very much a child's final height. We also discuss the role of hormones in growth, and obviously, growth hormones is critical for normal growth, but thyroid hormone and insulin and several other hormones also are needed to allow normal growth to proceed. But to be honest, it's relatively rare that we find a child who is growing poorly because of inadequate nutrition or lack of hormones. What parents need to know is that most children who are short are healthy, normal children who just happen to be at the lower end of the scale, of the growth scale, or even a little below the third percentile. But the most reliable indication as to whether you have a problem is to look at the rate of the child's growth. If the child is at the low end of normal or just below the normal and they're growing at a normal rate, which for school-age children is usually about 2 inches a year, then the chances that there is something underlying that would be found are relatively small.
Are there any specific things parents can do to help a child's natural growth? I know parents who have very small children think, well, maybe if he just gets more whole grains in his diet, or maybe if we give him a bigger multivitamin or something like that.
Well, we certainly encourage parents to feed their children healthy, low-fat diets, and I don't actually think that very many children have a diet which is limiting their growth. You know, we do occasionally see short, undernourished children, but it's pretty obvious when you look at those children that they have very little subcutaneous fat. But for the great majority of children, adding extra calories or extra vitamins is not going to have any impact on their growth.
Okay, subcutaneous means under the skin?
Under the
right?
skin.
Okay.
Right.
All right. We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on short stature in kids.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Paul Kaplowitz, co-author of The Short Child, about children with short stature.
You made an interesting comment. You said a healthy, low-fat diet.
Well, I didn't mean that that was going to impact on growth, but what I'm saying is that we encourage people to feed their kids in a way that minimizes the risk of obesity and heart disease. And we're not here to talk about that, but everybody knows that obesity is an epidemic among our children, and that high-fat diets, as well as less physical activity, are the major contributors. And I think physical activity is great, but it's not going to make your children grow any taller.
Although the fat business, I have heard children under a certain age do need a substantial amount of fat in their diet. Where is the cutoff for that?
I think that a lot of parents are unwilling to go to low-fat milk in children under two, but I think that probably once you're a year of age, you're out of that period when the amount of fat in the diet is critical. And any child over a year of age who is substantially overweight should be on not a no-fat diet, but a low-fat diet.
What's the diagnostic procedure for youngsters with a specific growth-hampering condition?
Well, I think the first issue that parents need to deal with is whether they need to see a specialist. I think that in the majority of cases, a pediatrician should be able, by reviewing a child's growth pattern, to tell parents if the problem is significant enough that they need to see a growth specialist. I think a lot of cases, pediatricians, although they may suspect that a child is normal, may say, well, I think your child is fine, but just to be sure, go see a specialist. And I think if you have a child who's at the third percentile or above on the growth chart and over time is growing at a clearly normal rate, there really is little reason to pursue this because that child is not going to be a candidate for growth-promoting therapy. On the other hand, if the child is below, particularly if they're well below the third percentile on a growth chart, and particularly if over time they are not keeping up with other kids at their percentile, what we say, falling off the growth chart, those are children that should be referred. And then we as specialists try to put together all the information. We try to factor in the height of the parents and brothers and sisters, any medical conditions the child may have. We'll want to take a history to find out if there are any medications that may slow growth. Parents may know that the drugs used for treating attention deficit disorder, what we call the stimulant drugs like Ritalin and Adderall, have been shown to slow growth in not all but a certain subset of children. So we try to get a history of the medications and other underlying conditions. And then the most important thing is we look at the growth chart. And, you know, in the majority of cases, I would say there is not a problem. But if there is a problem, then the evaluation usually starts with an X-ray of the hand and wrist to look at the bone maturation as well as a limited number of screening blood tests. And then at that point, it may point us in a direction or we may say, let's watch and see what your child's growth does over the next 6 to 12 months before deciding on more complicated tests.
Let's look for a minute at the kids themselves. And can you talk with us a little about the impact of especially short stature on the kids?
Well, this is a very interesting issue because I think it is widely assumed among parents and professionals that short stature has a significant impact on a child's happiness, self-esteem, and quality of life. And yet, people who have done studies on this, who basically interviewed and tested large numbers of kids on a variety of measures, actually have found the opposite, that as a group, short children are just as well-adjusted and happy and functioning normally as children of normal stature. And, of course, if you look only at children who are sitting in offices of pediatric endocrinologists, you may get a somewhat skewed sample because those typically are the children who are most unhappy. That's not to say that they don't have issues. There certainly are some children who feel teased, bullied. We use the term juvenilization, which I think is actually more common than bullying. A child who's 10 years old and in fifth grade, people say, well, you couldn't possibly be in fifth grade. You look like a third grader. And a lot of times it's parents, not just other kids. It's well-meaning adults who say these thoughtless things that are very hurtful. So, yes, children do have issues, but it doesn't seem to actually relate to how short they are. I've had some very short children who are perfectly fine with it. They have lots of friends. They're not getting pushed around. And you would be surprised at how many short children are not only participating in sports, but doing very well in sports. I'm not saying that they're stars, but they're playing basketball as, of course, a point guard instead of a center. But I think that short children who can still participate in a full range of age-appropriate activities tend to do very well psychologically. And it also has to do with family support. If you have parents who can help you deal with the occasional teasing and teach you that it's best to ignore teasing rather than to respond to it, kids grow up learning to cope with that among life's other adversities and challenges.
Are there other medical and physical problems that are associated with shortness of stature?
There are a few, and, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about them, but none of them are particularly common. I will highlight some of the ones that are most important. I think growth hormone deficiency is something that's in everybody's minds because it responds so well to growth hormone treatment. But the incidence of growth hormone deficiency is not very high, 1 in 5 or 10,000 children. And of the children below the third percentile, probably only less than 1% of those children actually have classic serious growth hormone deficiency. There are other children who may test slightly abnormal on growth hormone tests, but are not truly severely growth hormone deficient, and those children may still get some benefit from growth hormone. Hypothyroidism can occasionally cause short stature, but that's very easily treatable and very easily diagnosed.
What does that mean, hypothyroidism?
An underactive thyroid gland. It's easily diagnosed by simple blood tests. One of the keys is that most of those children will have a swelling in their lower part of their neck where their thyroid gland is located. Most pediatricians will screen for a thyroid problem as soon as they begin to worry about a child's growth. Among girls, there's a condition called Turner syndrome. It affects 1 in 2,500 girls, and it's due to lack of an X chromosome or part of an X chromosome, and it's diagnosed with a chromosome analysis. But there are also children who are born small for gestational age. They're low birth weight, and they don't catch up by 2 years of age. Some of these children have what we call syndromes. They have unusual facial or body appearance, and some of these children are perfectly normal except for being short. So when you add up, and in the book we list a bunch of other things, there are children with chronic illnesses who also have short stature, such as inflammatory bowel disease. But in my experience, it's relatively rare for children with chronic disease to show up at a pediatric endocrinologist's office without having that chronic disease diagnosed by another specialist. So when you put it all together, the really great majority of children who are short are healthy kids who just happen to be at the low end of the normal age spectrum, and a relatively few short children have a diagnosable medical condition.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on short stature in kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Paul Kaplowitz, co-author of The Short Child, about children who are short in stature.
How can parents and teachers be most helpful to these kids, assuming that they need a little support?
Well, I think one thing that parents can do to be helpful is to not spend so much time focusing on growth as an issue in and of itself. I think that if you have a child who's at the third or fifth percentile, is growing normally, and you would anticipate that they may end up 5'5", 5'6", or 5'7", I think that the best thing the parents could do is to be accepting of that, be supportive of the child, and not make the child feel like there's something wrong with them because they don't happen to be measuring up to their expectations. It's interesting that when you have short parents who have a child, a boy who's going to be 5'5", or a girl who's going to be 4'11", they tend not to be that upset about it. Whereas when you have taller than average parents, they almost feel like it's extremely unfair to them that here we are taller than average and our child is only going to be 5'6". And it's rare in my experience that there's anything wrong with the child, but the parent may make the child feel that there's something not right with them and that there needs to be a medical solution, i.e. growth hormone. Whereas in fact, what is needed is for the parents to be supportive of the child's efforts to find their way in the world, to find friends and activities that success does not depend on height. There are so many school and community activities that children can become involved with that don't involve being tall and strong. You know, there obviously are sports where height is less important, but a whole bunch of community activities that some kids do great in singing and in drama and other things, but supporting whatever your child decides to do and not saying, well, you have to go into this activity because I did it. And also, I think, to be supportive when the child comes home upset because somebody teased them or belittled them. The answer should be, well, let's discuss how you can handle that better next time, not let's go to the endocrinologist so we can get you get you growth hormone. Because one of the things I tell parents is that growth hormone does work in children who are short, who have no medical problem. We have a term for that. We call it idiopathic short stature. Idiopathic means no known cause. It basically means you have a short child and we can't find anything wrong with
it. Doesn't mean anyone's an idiot.
Yeah. By the way, before I talk more about idiopathic short stature, I should mention that there are many short children who have what we call constitutional growth delay. This is probably the most common cause of short stature. These are children who usually normal size at birth, but by the time they're 2 years old, they drop somewhat below the normal range. And then after 2 years old, they grow parallel to but slightly below the normal range. But here's the catch. They go through puberty late. So instead of having their growth spurt like other boys at age 13 or 14, and they're pretty much done growing by the time they're 16, these kids may not have their growth spurt until they're 15 or 16. And they may not be done growing until they're 19 or 20, until they're finished high school. And so you have children who are short during childhood, but by the time they get to be adults, they're perfectly normal. The problem is those teenage years. There's a time when everybody else is shooting up and these kids are still growing along at 2 inches a year. I've treated many, many such teenage boys. And I think that what these children need is not growth hormone, but a few injections of testosterone. Testosterone will help trigger the pubertal growth spurt at an earlier age than if you let nature take its course. I don't use this until the kids are 14, but you take a short, late maturing 14-year-old boy, give them a few injections of testosterone, their growth shoots up. Instead of continuing to fall behind, they start to catch up with other children. It's a very inexpensive and effective treatment.
But it basically triggers their natural
natural surge of hormones, right. Hmm.
And it's been found to be safe.
Yeah, I've published on the subject and others have. It's safe. And the interesting thing is that it doesn't seem to have any effect one way or another on their final height. It just helps kids get there sooner. And I find that that's what a lot of kids want, particularly the teenagers. And that's where sports come in. You've got this 14, 15-year-old kids, they're playing soccer, and all of a sudden everybody else is bigger than they are. The problem is that if you give growth hormone to such children, the effect is modest. Maybe you get an extra inch. But the expense of growth hormone is tremendous. It can be $30,000, $40,000 a year for a teenager. It's less for young children. Whereas testosterone is about $100 for a series of testosterone injections, and then their own growth hormone does the job. I am not recommending testosterone for 10-year-olds, though. I'm talking about for kids who are at the age when other kids would normally be going through puberty, and these children are what we call the late bloomers.
Dr. Kaplowitz, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to further pursue some of these issues? We're very lucky to have your book, The Short Child, A Parent's Guide to the Causes, Consequences, and Treatment of Growth Problems by Dr. Paul Kaplowitz and Dr. Jeffrey Barron. But are there other resources you'd suggest as well?
If people wanted to look on the World Wide Web, they should check on an organization called the Magic Foundation, which does have information on growth problems. If your child has been diagnosed with a specific growth problem and you want to learn more about it. But the other resource for people who are interested in exploring this whole issue in more detail, I just finished reading a book which came out last year. It's by Stephen Hall, a journalist, and it's called Size Matters. And it's actually not what it sounds like. It is a book which explores society's obsession with growth and size and looks at data on bullying and goes into animal studies on how size affects your reproductive success. But he also then reviews all the studies showing that children who are small end up functioning at a very normal level. And he ends up concluding that we should be doing more to support our children the way they are than to try to augment their height with growth hormone. Anyway, so this book just came out, and it's very interesting reading for anybody who wants to explore the growth problem in greater detail.
Well, this has been a very interesting conversation. So, Dr. Paul Kaplowitz, thank you so much for being with us.
A pleasure to have sat down with both of you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Dr. Paul Kaplowitz's book, The Short Child, A Parent's Guide to the Causes, Consequences, and Treatment of Growth Problems. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 320 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.